The world right now is just with the political unrest, with the corona, and just it's like we're living in like a movie, man. The zombies are coming next, guys. Like,
No, it's aliens. The aliens disappointed me. I thought for sure December 31st, but they let us down.
Welcome to Souls of Hip Hop,
a podcast for hip hop heads that aims to bring inspiring people together to share their wisdom, passion, and unique stories. My name is Candy.
And I'm DJ Razorcut.
And together we are Solidarity.
Connecting souls organically.
What's up, fam? Thanks for tuning in.
I'm Bert and Ernie, and we live on Sesame Street.
Hey, Bert. Rubber ducky.
He's the rubber ducky.
No. I'm Adrian Retza, the older and better looking brother, and hairier brother.
I don't know about that, though. I'm Lucas, the younger brother. I think probably the smarter one out of the two.
Yeah, you are.
But we're 80 Empiring Gladiator Records.
How would your parents describe what you do?
Our parents are kind of one of the biggest inspirations for us to do music. They always, as kids, pushed us positively to do music, not where it became like, I'm the keyboard, like I'm the producer, physical producer. So all the gear back here, keyboards and stuff, all the production stuff that you see, it's all physically me doing it. Adrian's the lyric guy, the writer, the singer, and he might not physically play something, but he can hear something in his head and go, can you try this, ba-da-ba-ba-da, you know, and do something like that. So they always pushed us to pursue our passion, but to be realistic about it, you know? To know when we're not good enough yet. Like, you got to, you know, you're good, guys, but you got to keep hustling.
But
got to keep working at it.
I think they'd also say that, though, what we're doing is direct correlation to how they brought us up, because they exposed us to music and culture from a very early age. Yeah. So I think they would say, well, it's no mystery that our kids are doing this.
We're not surprised. Yeah.
Because we showed them hip hop and James Brown and brought them to concerts. It makes sense that this is the lane they decided to drive in.
And speaking of James Brown and your dope shirt, one of our first concerts, funk concerts, was our parents took us to see James Brown.
Oh, wow.
I must have been in grade, you know, I must have been.
You were, I know exactly.
13, 12?
I was, no, we were a little early. We went to a lot more concerts before that, but I was in the 11th grade. You were in the 9th grade because.
So I was 13.
Yeah, because I had an English exam the next day, but my parents are like, if it was math, you're stupid. They didn't say stupid, I'm saying that. They're like, math, you're so-so. English, you're a good bullshitter. So we could go to the concert, you could still get an A in the English exam and do all right.
Yeah.
It was a Sunday concert.
It was a Sunday concert in Toronto.
In one of the interviews that we were reading in preparation, you said, the hip hop you're putting out just feels right to you, that you've always been unapologetically hip hop. What does that mean to you? What is unapologetically hip hop?
I'll use the example of our publishing deal. You know, when you get a publishing deal, we have one with Universal, and many times they'll set you up in a group, in a room with writers, or someone comes from LA. Hey man, so-and-so's in town. They're going to come to your studio. And my brother and I are chameleons. We could fit in, but in a way we didn't fit in, because we're unapologetically hip hop. Like, it's very difficult for us to go, okay, guys, we're feeling Britney Spears, and we're feeling, you know, in the chorus, Taylor Swift, and now we want you to go this, and now you want, and obviously, you know, so we're unapologetically hip hop, and that's why we've gone back to our roots. Like, I think even the way we raise our children is hip hop. Like, it's attitude, but it's empathy,
and it's authentic. I think my brother and I are really authentic. What you see is what you get. The way we're speaking to you guys is the way we speak to people that we've known for years, or people we've just met, you know, within 5-10 minutes. This is who we are, and we never fit into those molds. When you see a pop song, and not to knock it because there's some great songs out there, but when you see certain songs and there's like 12 writers on a song that maybe has 14 words in the whole song, you know, you kind of go, what was really going on in that session? How is that, you know, it's fast food. And we want to be fast in how we continue to put out music to hopefully inspire people, to make people feel, whether they feel sad or good or strong, or they want to punch somebody out with, you know, a song that we put out. We want to create that authenticity that in our music. And that's where I think it's unapologetic. Whether you like us or not, this is us. We're not faking the funk. We're not putting some sheep's clothing or some, you know, smoke and mirrors.
And we never try to be what we're not. Like, no, we work on music with a lot of people. And Lucas and I never like to front, You know, we never bullshit where we're from.
Yeah.
We never say we're from the streets. Now, we know a lot of street characters. We've known a lot of street characters for a long time. When you do music, it's inevitable, but we never say like, I'm not, you know, you might use a metaphor or analogy, but we always like to also use, like, when you look at Martin Scorsese, you know, he directs a lot of mafia movies. He's not mafioso, he's Italian. He understands it because that's one very small aspect, especially of North American Italian culture, that people, you know, they think, hey, oh, forget about it. I'm from New York, Frankie. You know, so we're doing the same thing with our music. Like, we've always understood street culture, known dudes from the street. We never once like rap a set or say we're from a gang or say that, because that'd be bullshit. If someone jumps on a record and speaks about that, we're not going to stop them from spitting their truth on a verse on one of our tunes.
I definitely feel that in your music. You can sense the passion behind the music. That's something that I really appreciated when I was listening to your music.
Thank you. Thank I appreciate you that. And that's the thing. We want to create that feeling, have people express their emotions. And like you said, I think music never died, but I think it went hidden. You know, the media wanted to push that narrative on music. And it's happened, you know, for decades. And okay, we're getting sick of this gangster rap stuff from the West Coast, the NWAs, and the let's start pushing this real pop rap, push that shit to the side. So it's always happened, but I think it's changing in where, how can you not have a voice to what's going on in the world right now? And you could have club tracks and fun tracks, but you also got to have some shit that has some purpose, have some meaning. And
well, like To Kill a Black Man.
Yeah.
A Black Man is a record on the album. And that wasn't planned for the album. But, you know, listen, the killing of innocent black males in the United States
is horrendous.
Again, when Corona hit, everybody was forced to pay attention because no one's at work. So we were just like, enough's enough. It's sad to say 4 people were killed on the storming of Capitol Hill. But so it just shows you the white privilege is really well and alive. So again, when we did To Kill a Black Man, we're like, listen, we have to say something. And I think it's important for white voices, even though we're Mediterranean and we identify with hip hop culture and when we identify with many different cultures, at the end of the day, if people have to put you in a Venn diagram, they're going to put us in the white category. And so we felt it's really our job to just sit back and be lovers of hip hop and benefit off the culture and just sit on the sidelines and not say shit. That would have been extremely irresponsible. But at the same time, we wanted to call some of our homies from the States
that have experience,
who are of color, who are black, Latino, who really experience shit from the cops and racism and systemic racism. So I did my verse, I did the chorus, got some of our homies to jump on, but we're like, I think it's really important now. People should be responsible. Not everyone's gonna be political, but have a little bit of a message.
And that's where, again, back to your question about unapologetic, what it means right there is like, we're unapologetic. That's how we feel. We're pro-choice, we're pro whatever culture, whatever you decide to, how you live your life, whether you're identified as a he or a she or non-binary. You judge people on their character, not on what they choose and how they choose to live their life. And if people don't like the way we feel, you know what I mean? That's the unapologetic side of hip hop. Because hip hop's always been, yo, this is what I'm spitting. If you don't like it, fuck you.
We've lost friends and people off social media, especially with To Kill a Black Man.
We've gained the loss. Losing them was a gain.
Yeah.
Because the people that I kind of knew were bigots, the wonderful click of unfollow. Man, it's been a great cathartic kind of going, click.
Yeah.
That felt good and I didn't have to say anything. So anyways.
I think hip hop has always been political. I think as artists, that there's always that border of whether that's going to hurt your artistry. As creatives and as producers and as artists, you decided to create a track to express what you feel and to support. Is this always been sort of your vibe? Where do you get that from?
I think we get it from our parents. Growing up in Toronto, we grew up in a suburb of Toronto, like 20, 30 minutes away from downtown Toronto, in a predominantly Italian neighborhood. But my parents, although they're born in Italy, my dad came to Canada when he was 16, mom came when she was a couple of months old. My parents always grew up just a little bit more different than the rest of the relatives. They grew up really appreciating black music and culture. So when they had us, they brought us to concerts. Toronto's got a big Caribbean festival called Caravana. We were probably the only Italians kids that went. And then our parents just raised us to be empathetic and to not judge people. But our grandparents were the same way, especially my mom's side. Yeah. There was never talk of color. You know, again, my wife's half Trinidadian. Like my wife, for lack of a better description, my wife is a visible minority. And my parents never once said, how come you're, for lack of a better description, dating a mixed girl? They love my wife. Man, I've been married, it's gonna be 18 years, guys, this summer. And my parents love my wife. They love my brother's wife. And it was never like, you're dating an Asian girl, you're dating a mixed girl. Like, nah, like they love the people who we chose to make our life
partners. When you look at the similarities of culture, I mean, it's so similar. People like to divide all the time with this shit. You go to an Italian house, the first thing a mother asks you is, have you eaten? Are you going to eat? You're going to eat. Any European family is going to tell you that. You're going to eat? You're going to eat. Mm-hmm. You go to a Chinese house, my beautiful mother-in-law, she doesn't even say hi first. It's like, did you eat? You going to eat? In an Italian house, you're having pasta. And in a Chinese house, you're having rice. I mean, it's the same shit. It's carbs and it's fattening. You know? That's what it comes down to. It's carbs. That's all that matters, yeah. You see?
So talking about your Italian heritage, what is your favorite Italian dish and who of the two of you is the better cook?
I'm the better cook.
I haven't cooked in a while, but you know, I used to cook.
It was 1987 in Adrian's last. No, I'm the better cook. Mind you, our wives do 99.9999999% of the cooking. I do make a wicked homemade fettuccine, which has been approved by a few Italian chefs, i.e. my dad and my mom. If they approve it, then you know you're straight.
I think I really like pasta alla carbonara, but I've had it here at restaurants in North America. It's not the same, man. Have that in Italy
because it's not all the preservatives. So
I envy you guys living in Europe. I love Europe. That's a place where
he's basically saying if you have an extra room, he's coming. And
I'm coming,
once
guys.
COVID's over.
My dream is to go across Europe with a van and just go and buy vintage and antique things. That's what I want to do.
What kind of vintage and antique things?
You know, I like a little bit of everything. Like, I like a lot of tins. To go back to the Gladiator, like 80 Empire, it's 80 Empire. Obviously, Empire, there's the whole, again, Roman mythology, Roman history too.
In our blood, we have Roman blood.
My mom's from Rome. Rome. But the 8, like we spell it 80 because we grew up in the 80s and the 90s. So 80, but it's really also AD, you know, like for historical. So I'm analog. I'm more the analog character. I love history. Luke is the digital guy, because he's working all the equipment.
Just to add to that, an example was a few days ago, Adrian had to do a Zoom and he called me in the morning. It was like 8 a.m. It's not working. They live literally like a 2-minute drive. So I literally walk in and went, click, okay, you're good. And I literally left. Like I was in my pajamas and shit. It depicts our name from 80 Empire to a T.
You know what I love about antiques and stuff, rather than like the whole digital world? And again, I collect a little bit of everything. Like I love old signs. I love busts. Like I've always loved heads. Like even in art school, like drawing heads and necks. And the thing I love about antiques, and I even tell my kids this, is that, you know, it's not so much about the object, but it's about the memory. In Rome, there's Porta Portese, one of the oldest flea markets. Going there and some of the things that I bought from Porta Portese, I remember like the day hanging out with my older cousin. Now with what's going on in the world, I'm like, man, I hope I can have that experience with him again. I call it a pinball machine. It's really a game of chance. It's from the 1930s. It's Lucky Strike. It's a pinball machine. I bought that when my daughter was, my oldest was 2. Well, no, my daughter's 14, so I've had it for 12 years. But again, my daughter and I sharing that experience, that because she was cutie patootie, she's 2 years old, he gave it to us for a cheaper price. And so we'll always have that experience. So
it's memories.
It's memories, more so than the object itself.
Instead of going to those little shops and buying souvenirs that are like whatever, you're going to antique shops and flea markets and antiques, and those are your souvenirs for memories.
Yeah.
It's already memories in it, right? Because somebody else had memories with them.
Well, I always bust his chops because my wife and I are big horror fans and love horror films. And I'm like, you know, you're going to buy one of those antiques one day. That's some evil spirit's going to come home. No. My wife, we always joke because when we watch these movies like that with the, you know, the house that's in, we're like, our movie would be literally 5 minutes long. Like, that's our movie. Be like, honey, we got a new house. Oh, I just heard something. Okay, let's get the fuck out. Credits. There's like 4 names. Credits. I'll speak on this because my brother hates horror films. My son is 7. So I love Halloween. So I have like all the masks, like Michael Myers, like all the different masks. This year, if you look at my personal Instagram, every year we do like a couple of like Halloween videos. So this year I was Pennywise and our kids played the role of 2 kids looking out our back window. And I'm doing the whole wave with the balloon and all that shit.
Child services are coming.
Yeah. You know, many, many years ago, you know, my son was getting really, really scared of the masks. And I said, look, it's only adults fear. Kids don't have these fears. We put it into them to be afraid of this shit. So I would literally take the mask off, show him my face, put it back on. And I take his hand and go, feel it. Like, it's not real. It's just a mask. It's not scary. He loves it now. So his kids don't care too much.
But I think it's too, it's a different dichotomy. Like a male with a male, like a son and a father. Like there's a little
yours is two girls. Yeah.
We're competitive with each other, but my oldest daughter, especially
for like sports and stuff.
Like loves sports, loves soccer, and wasn't able to play this year. And she plays against boys. Like some kid in her school once said something to her, like, oh, we're gonna beat you this weekend. She goes, she said something like, yo, shut your mouth. And he goes, your dad chirped at the sideline. She goes, at least my dad watches the game. Your mom sits and flirts with all the fathers. I said, you didn't say that. She goes, I did.
Mic like, drop.
Yeah, that's the hip hop battle mentality.
That's the hip hop, man.
Yeah.
To bring it back on focus.
She's
right?
Unapologetically hip hop.
So we've been talking about the Legacy album, which just came out January 1st. Thanks to Adrian and Lucas providing us the permission, we're going to listen into the title song of the album, Legacy, which features Conway the Machine and Ballistic Man.
Legacy, legacy, we are on a borrowed time. Do it for a legacy. Early morning, sleepless nights. Paid our dues and earned our stripes. We do this for the legacy. For our children in the memory.
I do this shit for my legacy. Came a long way from when I caught my first felony. Police arresting, why they just won't let us
Leave
be?
Alone,
my nigga done
man.
Is home, I'm happy them crackers let him
what
free.
Up, nigga?
The rims on the SUV, got the letter B. With all I've been through, it's hard to find a nigga blessed as me. It's hard to find a nigga fresh as me. But I'ma make sure my two sons forever eat. I don't trust niggas, I don't let nobody next to me. I was showing love, niggas thought he was finessing
thought
me.
He was slick, huh?
I guess we all on borrowed time. My homie ain't having strap, I let him borrow mine. My pops around, but tell Carl I'm fine. I'm just going hard on my grind.
I got it from here.
Got scars on my body, no scars on my mind. So the charts will climb. Cause
we are on borrowed time. Live forever through our rhymes. We do this for our legacy. Do it for our legacy. Early morning, sleepless night. Paid our dues and earned our stripes. We do this for the legacy.
Well, you should retire, we been fire. This one's from Buffalo, shout out to 80 Empire. They always stressing me, they wanna know the recipe. But it was destined, not even prison testing my legacy. Dream to win, I don't judge a movie till I seen the end. My girl asked me, can I be your legacy like Queen and Slim? Stupid lame, mention my name and you'll get super flame. Suck a dick, that's what they'll do for fame or a stupid chain. Face the horror, I'm from a block where you can place your order. By the border, grab a pot of Leo from the famous corner. Went to the feds at 20, what you think I'm doing at 16? Shit that you only seen on the big screen. Say your prayer. See your demons at night when they appear. In here, stay on your P's and Q's, you gotta stay aware. Went to prison, serve my time. Body every word I rhyme. Now the charts, I'ma climb, cuz
we are on borrowed time. Live forever through our rhymes. We do this for our legacy. Do it for our legacy. Early morning, sleepless night. Paid our dues and earn our stripes. We do this for our legacy. If we wasted all these years through all the blood, sweat, and tears, but I know we didn't. Oh no, 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 Gigi Envy Tuchinaya.
It's our legacy, man.
Can you tell us about the time that you were nominated for a Juno Award?
Like a couple years ago, we were nominated for the equivalent of a Grammy in Canada. It's called the Junos, so it's the Canadian version. And we were nominated for a project that we executive produced and produced, I think, 9 out of the 15 tracks that were there. There's this little town in one of the provinces called Saskatoon. It's like, you don't go to Saskatoon on a trip.
It's not on your bucket list of places.
It's not on your bucket list, right? And we were like, hey, you know what? We were nominated as executive producers for the whole project. You know, maybe we go because it's the Junos. So we started looking at prices for like literally two nights and some flights. It was like $3,500. We said, are you out of your mind? For what? And then we didn't win anyway, so we dodged that bullet.
One thing I like about Europe too is that there's so many practitioners of the culture of hip hop here. That's kind of one thing I'm bummed about COVID right now, is I was really looking forward to getting to know the community and getting to know, yeah, going to show.
Even us, I mean, obviously the silver lining was we were able to put out Legacy and connect with people just because everybody's glued to their devices right now. But the con was, you know, we were supposed to do a video for Dedicate with BG Knockout, Eazy-E's protege. We're supposed to go down to Compton and do it. We were supposed to do a video with Bishop Lamont for Fit In and get actual footage out there, because Laz, who's a doctor on the front lines, who's also an MC, is in Vegas. So we could have gotten Vegas and then we would have went to Carson, California. Crooked Eye, shout out to Crooked Eye COB. We were going to shoot Take It Back, and we have some other stuff that we're working on with Crooked Eye. So being able to get in the studio physically is far better than texts, than DMs, than phone calls. And
so we feed off of people's of energy, man. Yeah. So, you know, this whole year, you know, we haven't had that experience of being face to face with people, because there's nothing like that human contact, you know.
When you guys work together, can you give me a little picture of like what is needed to create?
We come from, again, like you said, like you guys are performers. You're a B-girl. Razor, you're a DJ. So you guys have had that experience with an audience, with the crowd. And a lot of the new generation don't have that experience. It's all like Fruity Loops and on their phone on an app. So we come from that. So even though we don't have that experience of being out because of what's going on in the universe right now, we still come from that. Okay, you have to make shit up on the spot sometimes.
Yeah. I was going to use the word improv. You guys are from, whether you're dancing, you're DJing, not everything is planned. You know, you're DJing and all of a sudden you see something like, okay, I got to flip these songs and get into this house music now, or switch back to, you know how it, you guys know. So with us, that's how we do it. I love the pressure. Like, I'll give you an example. We're working on our second project with Swifty. So we put out our first project back in July.
And Swifty was in D12.
Swifty McVeigh, legendary Detroit legend from D12. And we're working on our second project together. And he called me up and he went, yo, Luke, man, I need like a kind of an up-tempo fucking rap battle song. Like something that I could just, you know, you know. And he goes, I'm just hearing like a bass line and did it, you know.
Prayers are hopeless.
My prayers are hopeless. And I went, I know exactly what you want. I hear it in my head. So Adrian was actually driving in Toronto. He was coming back from something. And I called my brother and I said, this is what he's looking for. And Adrian's like, well, you know, give me that, you know, that kind of bass line, that, not to toot my own horn. No.
Toot it all you want.
I knew what he wanted. In a half an hour, I sent him over a beat. He goes, yo, motherfucker. He goes, that shit's fast. Okay, I'm gonna listen to it. He called me back 5 minutes later and went, like, you nailed exactly what I wanted. We feed off of that. Like, I don't need to go to the beach to get inspired to do a tropical song. If somebody goes, yo, I want like a Afro house beat. All right, let's.
Speaking of Boston, you guys know Slane, you know, big Boston guy. He posted a quote from Stephen King saying that I don't need to get inspired to work on the music. Like, obviously we're inspired, we're artists. But for us also, it's that gladiator mentality. Like, shit, sometimes we all wake up and with what's going on in the world, it's bloody depressing. But we're like, yo, we could just gotta
get up.
The moment I come up with a concept or Lucas shows a beat, if there's a little bit of that, like, Pablo Picasso blue period feeling down, we knock out of it. It's like, boom, the booth is right there, that white door. So I'll just like, yo, I'm not even going to write this shit. Just go in there. Yeah. I'm going to start singing shit or thing. And then we'll chop it up, or I'll go back and refine it. Or sometimes it's good enough that we'll keep it. And it's like, okay, yo, maybe this one little note, I'm off key because I didn't know where I was going to go. Let me just go and sing that little thing. But that's how we attack it. And that's how we've been attacking Legacy, like really with the whole album. We really wanted to bring that old school human touch to it where you feel the sincerity. We really wanted to put the right chess pieces. The chess pieces being the MCs.
You said it like A&R it. Like really
A&R it. Like an old school album. Like, you know, and again, you guys were talking about Switzerland and in Europe in general, they're purveyors of hip-hop culture. That's why we call on some of our Italian homies. Like the record with Jadakiss, we got Cheka on there and Walino. Walino was from like a legendary crew called Puya Tribe. And then they morphed into the Body Jungle Brothers, where my brother and I have done a bunch of shit for the Body Jungle Brothers. I was at the studio 2 summers ago and hung out with them and was in the video.
In Southern Italy,
Puglia. You know, Maxil Nano's another dude we have on another record. Preso Male is another, a young dude we have on another record. So, you know, like with the next project, shit, like we might, like Razor, man, have you do some cuts or something. Like, and I think that's what hip hop is. It's community. And a lot of people forget that.
I always say this a lot when people ask me, hip hop, unfortunately, is the only genre of music that shits on the originators, the OGs. Not all of them, right? Because you have like the Kendricks, but Kendrick is not even 21 anymore. He's not 25, he's in his 30s. A lot of those guys like that are maybe newer, or Kendrick's been around for a minute. You know, the newer guys, like the little, I don't know, I won't say little this or little that, but when you have a little at the beginning of your name and you're a trap artist, a lot of them shit on the pioneers. You never get that in rock. Mm-hmm. If a young rock group could do a song with Metallica, it'd be like, if you're
like Robert Plant from Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, or anything like that. If you're a reggaeton artist and you get to work with a Daddy Yankee and some of the ones that have been around for
Calderon.
Yeah, is like, you know, some of these guys.
They hit it on.
Yeah. You're like going, fuck, I'm working with royalty. Where there's hip hop,
Lil Pump is going off at Eminem lately.
Yeah, like saying Eminem is old. Are you kidding me? Yeah, so what? So Eminem is 50 years old. So you're telling me that you can't continue to be an artist past a certain age, but Mick Jagger can be pushing 80, still strutting his shit on stage like an OG? That's the one thing I hate about hip hop, is that this young generation shit on that. And listen, you wouldn't be doing this shit and doing it satisfactory, if I'd be honest with you, doing it mediocrely.
We almost have to change the term old school to just classic.
Yeah.
It's classic material. It's not old school. It's just classic, because old school kind of insinuates, man, you an old head, man. You old, dog. It's old school.
Well, because Adrian, you're a picker, it's vintage. Yo, that shit vintage, son.
Oh my gosh, our teen came to us and they're like, parents, do you guys have any of your vintage clothes that I can borrow? And I was like, our vintage clothes, what do you mean, the clothes we wear every day? Yeah, we got all that. Go ahead, check it out.
Listen, I had a small fortune that I got rid of foolishly. We both did. Like, you know when your Tims got scuffed up and you got rid of them? Mm-hmm. What a mistake. I had Rock-A-Wear jackets and shit. Like, when you could go to Marshall's, TJ Maxx, you're like, oh, they got a Rock-A-Wear jacket for only $85? What? And you go to school, I got the Rock-A-Wear shit with the white up-downs and shit like that, singing Annie up, punching people. No.
That's the cool thing with hip-hop in the universe. I mean, not that song, but like a big song for us, in the early, like 2000, 2001, whatever, was Never Scared.
That was 04.
And that was
04, 05.
That was such 03. A big, big tune. And then we become good friends with Bone Crusher. Mm-hmm. We have songs with him. Like, he's not on the Legacy Project, but we've done music with him over the years. He's got an album. He's coming back out with stuff. We've got one of the main singles. And then we got a record with him, CeeLo Green and Music Soul Child. We're praying comes out this year too, but it just, again, like, you know, you listen to someone and you become friends with them. That's like the beauty of doing music.
Yeah. And again, the silver lining to COVID, like, we've connected with people that maybe wouldn't have been able to connect with before, because they're not on tour. They're not so busy. You know, they're at home going, all right, I might as well check my DMs. Yo, who's that?
And we're at home more too. So
yeah. So when all of a sudden they're checking DMs and they're like, and they get a million DMs, but when you hit them with like, hey man, would love to connect and do some work. And they're like, oh shit, you know, they've worked with people, they have a track record themselves. All right, let's do some work. That's been cool. And like you guys said, putting it into existence. We put out an album back in March with a friend of ours from Buffalo. The same day, a rapper called Graf from New York dropped his album. And I'm like, man, I'd love to do some joints with Graf, because Graf is super dope with his flows and shit. New Year's Day, Graf is like, yo, I got my verse, I just sent it to you. So you throw it in existence, man. Like John Connor, loved him from his SOS stuff. And then, you know, obviously on the Compton soundtrack that he was on. John's on the first single outside of Legacy that's coming out in February, will be John Connor. You got to wish it. Man, I think we failed more than we've succeeded, but it's those failures that have allowed us to continue. And we try to tell younger artists, whether they're working with us under Gladiator or just as features or, you know, one-off projects, you got to be consistent. Don't bitch a year later that you haven't made it yet, man. You've only been working on this for a few years, man. We've been doing this a long time. Even the biggest of artists, when you think it's overnight success, it's not, man. You don't see all the roads and the battles and stuff. You got to hustle your own shit, because nobody's going to hustle as much as you are for your own shit. You know, unapologetically hip-hop.
You touched on the Legacy album. You really A&R'd it and picked out the artists you wanted to collaborate with and have on there. And you have such an impressive and long list of people, you know, from Conway, from Griselda, over Jadakiss. You have Crooked Eye, Master Ace, Fred the Godson, and so many more. Can you tell us a bit what your thought process was when you were mapping out your vision for the album?
I think with us, again, like we're like unapologetically hip hop. We were like, we want to get the elite. Like when we had this legacy in mind, we're like, who are people that are either already have carved out legacies or who are already well on their way to that upper echelon? And it's not even an elitist thing because we've got just a wide variety of different people. You know, but we're like, yo, man, we just want to get people who are mean lyrically, bars, because, you know, again, we're all about bars and beats, but because I'm a singer as well, we have that melody. And then a lot of cats, like guys like Conway, they don't have a lot of melody in the record, like the Derringer production and that stuff of a lot of like the Griselda stuff. It's not. So we're like, it's kind of cool to take people who we respect. We know the world they come from, but they might not necessarily be in that melodic world that we also understand growing up with all the R&B and the funk and the soul and the James Brown that our parents exposed us to. So we're like, wouldn't it be cool if you're getting like, we are on borrowed time, but then you're like, yo, I do the shit for my legacy, like Conway jumping in. So we're like, yo, if we can nail these different worlds together, and it took a little bit to get started, but once we started getting people to buy in, it was just like a domino effect, and we're like, yo, man, this is beautiful, you know? Yeah. And it's unfortunate
for Fred.
With Fred, I'll let you speak on that real briefly.
Well, Fred was a sad one because we had connected with Fred the summer prior, so not this past COVID summer, but when the world was all right. And he heard Fit In and was like, yo, I love this record. Mm-hmm. I want to jump on it. So we kind of stayed in contact here and there. And back in March, I said, you know, hey, Fred, we want to put this record out now, Fit In.
Just a little quick backstory, because we're like, Lucas was like, right now the world's kind of struggling
to fit in.
To fit in this new world we're that's just in unraveled in front of us like that. Like, we're walking around, hanging out at clubs, cafes, discos,
three weeks later, we're
yeah. Now we're all masked up like this, and it's just like, yo, we're trying to fit in now, yeah, man.
So we started talking, and then he was like, yo, you know what? Let's put this out, and then let's do a Fred the Godson 80 Empire EP joint project together. So we were like, we were talking, we were texting back and forth, and I remember as my last text was on a Friday, like, hey, you got everything? We're good. He goes, yo, I'm ready to go next week. I'm going to start. And then Monday, he put a picture up of him with a ventilator saying, you know, I got hit with this COVID. And then 2.5 weeks later, he passes away. Yeah, and you know, my brother and I, again, being...
We're not clout chasers.
I contacted his manager and I contacted his wife, and I said, we still want to put this out. I was speaking with Fred, but I don't want to be one of these in poor taste, like now that he's dead, oh, everybody's going to put up their verse with Fred the Godson. I said, I don't want to be that person. And whether we make $5 or $500 or $5,000, I want all the money that from that song to go to your family, to go to the Fred the Godson Foundation, or personally to your family. Because, you know, being a father, all of us here being parents, Fred leaves behind 2 daughters. And in my kids' age group, like I think they were, you know, 10 and 8. I can't imagine, you know, you losing your parent at 38 years old. I think Fred was 38. And it's awful, you know. So we've actually connected really close with his brother, Russ. Shout out to Russ. And I think, you know, at some point we're going to make that EP still with Fred. Brother's like, Fred's got a lot of acapellas that need, you know, 80 Empire.
Need to be out in the world.
And he goes, I want to, for Fred's legacy, because Fred's coming out with an album this year that was, this was Fred's year, or 2020 was Fred's year to kind of take it. Fred the Godson is your favorite rapper's favorite rapper. Mm-hmm. That's who Fred was.
Well, he's respected by Fat Joe and all these guys that is super, super
Nas,
big.
Nas, everybody,
you know,
is.
But now, like, he was bubbling and working on some things. But, you know, it's... Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate with life. The only predictable thing in life is the unpredictable, so.
Yeah, but Reza, as you were saying, you know, who would think to get Fred and then get Bishop Lamont from Carson, California, and then get a rapper from Italy, and then get this very folk, you know, singer from our neighborhood to jump on, you know, with Adrian on the hook, and then get Dr. Laz. And we got Laz. Laz had a verse already. He hadn't recorded it yet, and then Fred had passed, and COVID hit. And Laz is like, I have to change my verse because
he's also a doctor
he's a doctor
in Las Vegas at like in the emergency room.
Yeah, Laz is actually Dr. Khan in real life. And so it just kind of, he's talking about COVID in that record. And even some of the words that Fred is saying is kind of like eerily.
Fred and Finn goes, I thank God that I'm here now. And all of my metaphors y'all can hear now. I really blend it in. But it's just like, when we heard that and he passed away, we're like, yo, fuck, man. It's like he's now like in the heavens with God looking down. And my legacy, my music's going to be heard like by the masses. And I'm not being arrogant and saying our song, just his whole catalog, you know. We're a very small speck of sand in Fred's discography, you know what I mean? But it just, when you hear that, it like, to be honest, man, we got choked up. Like, we already loved what he did, but then him passing and hearing what he wrote, it was like, man, it's like, it gives you shivers, you know?
Legacy gave us goosies.
I appreciate that. Comments like that make it feel like what we're doing has a purpose, you know, whether two people are 2,000 or 2,000.
You do this for the art, unless, yeah, we all want to, you know, we all post statistics and things on Instagram or on Instagram stories because it's a way of pushing the brand forward in order to keep the lights on, you know? When other companies, whether it's a larger record company or distribution company, whether it's a branding company, you need to do that to keep this machine going. But at the end of the day, we're real artists. And really the legacy of the music is our children seeing that, look at, our fathers never quit. Whether we're making $1 million or 10 cents off of this shit. And that's what we put our kids on family love. It's like the legacy is whatever you do in life, not every success could be measured in monetary success. To me, success is in the execution. You guys are doing a podcast. It's successful because you execute it. You're taking time out of your day to meet with two bums from Canada and do a podcast.
There's one bum.
No, but I'm joking, but there's success. That to me, success is executing something that was an idea or something written on a paper and you're doing it. You guys, as a unit, as a significant other said, yo, we love the culture, let's do a podcast. You're doing it. And you know, whether 10 million people, gazillion people are listening or whether 5,000 people are listening, whether it's 5,000 or 5 million, it's a success because you took an idea. When a lot of people say, yo, I could do that. I could do a podcast.
And they never, you know what?
You could do a podcast, smartass, go and do it. You can make an album, smartass, go do it. You could be a graphic designer, smartass, do it. It's all the talkers that say they could do it. They're the trolls who sit behind their keyboard and do nothing. So to me, success is in the execution, regardless of the monetary.
I've always said I could do a six pack, but that's the one thing I can never put a legacy on saying that I would finally get down to my Marvel Avengers.
And we're the fattest Italians, man. When you go to Italy,
wait.
Because the Italians in Europe are all thin. Luke and I go there. We look like when we won. We're like, oh shit. Like they're looking at us like, oh God, the Italian Canadians. They call us Americana.
No, but okay, here's a funny story. So I was actually a lot heavier. I was 40 pounds heavier and I lost. And I put a few pounds back because of COVID. But when we went to Italy with our, like a family trip with our folk, this was 7 years ago. We were both at our heaviest. And we roll into Italy and, you know, in Europe, but in Italy, the men are thinner than the women. And that's saying a lot because the women are thin. And Adrian and I'm like, holy shit. Like, I think WWF probably thinks two beached whales landed on the shores and are going to throw us back in the water. Like, if we went to the ocean, there'd be fucking Greenpeace.
No, but even when we went
coming by going, literally, I was like, holy crap. Like, you and me are the fattest.
No. When we went to
Italians in this shit.
So years ago, we signed. Many moons ago, our manager was Chris Smith.
Wait,
we were
Italy?
Signed at one point to Chris Smith Management. He managed Nelly Furtado, still does. He has Alicia Cara. And we signed a deal with Universal and him, and then Interscope was going to be involved, and we were going to sing in Italian, yada, yada. And never, we sat around for 3-4 years, which happens with a lot of people. But you grow from that experience. But we went to Milano to do a showcase for the president of Universal Italy, and they loved it. They're just like, you know, some of the colloquialisms. Same with you, Razor. Like, you know, if you grew up in Switzerland, some of the colloquialisms are off. But we go to Milano, and again, Luke and I were the biggest dudes in Milano. And I remember our nonna, grandmother in Italian, she's like, oh God, you're going into a trip, but you're going to suffer. You're not going to eat. And we're like, nonna, we're going to the birthplace.
We're going to the motherland.
We're going to your motherland, man. We're going to Italy. But we were the fattest dudes in Milano. Literally, like, I remember, like, walking off the airport.
Fat with a bee.
Timberlands walking on the street. People are moving on the other side of the street. Like, who are these two, like, grizzly bears?
Well, we looked like we're going to rob all the Milan. That's what we're like.
Everybody's in their Argyle sweaters. Allora, andiamo stasera per mangiare una bella...
Everybody's wearing, like, rolled up khakis and shit. Like, the guys, we're with fucking Tim's. Like we say, going back to Annie Up, we're doing this shit like...
But then they took us to a club. I think it was called Club Hollywood in Milano. And that was like when Lean Back came out. Nobody knew how to dance. Like everyone's dancing like this. Like, and then my brother and I like, Lean Back, Lean Back. Like everyone's looking at us like, who are these guys? And we're like...
Unfortunately, you can't see their dance moves on the podcast. But instead, we're going to bring you another song called Cosa Nostra from their Legacy album.
The mob is like a big familia. It all began in old Sicilia. On a boat to America. Missing my home in Italia. And it's rough on the streets of America. So we created our own conciliaries and capos, paid out cops to make men. But if you double cross us, we'll call out the hitmen. And the money was made in America. By the gun and the blade in America. Man, if it ever leaks, you've been taking the key. Kiss you on both cheeks. You up shit creek. Ooh.
This is La Cosa Nostra. You better shut your boca. We don't play games, I told ya. Have one hand on your holster. This is La Cosa Nostra. You better shut your boca. Watch where your nose is poking. We sleep with one eye open.
I did win back in grade six. I won the best breakdance competition of my town.
Hey,
we've got rhythm. You know, I mean, you're not not gonna want us on your team. Like, we can dance.
We can dance, but we're not dancers. Like, no. We're not like.
There's a rapper from Canada called Maestro Fresh West, and he was like Canada's version of Big Daddy Kane Rock Jam.
I'm gonna find a sample.
He was the godfather, and he came to like one of our parents at a cottage years ago, and we went, and our cousin was hanging out with us, and we're doing a lot of music with Maestro, and our cousin thought it was so cool, because like in elementary school, Maestro was the man. Now we're here in our 20s, however old we were, and we're chilling with Maestro, but still rocking CDs in the car back then. My brother puts that on, and we were just, Maestro's in the front with my brother. My cousin and I are like this, and I just remember this beach community. It's like Northern Ontario. It's like wherever, like going north in Boston to like more of a beach, like kind of cottagey place. And like Luke and I and Maestro and my cousin is like, yo, this is so cool. We're listening to Annie Up with the Canadian Godfather of hip hop. And like, we're scaring the shit out of people because we're all like this, driving up and down the strip, like listening to Annie people. Up. Like, you know,
another sample. If you haven't heard it, have you heard of Herb Albert?
Oh yeah, Albert? Of course. Famous musician.
Yeah.
A lot of dope.
So the track Rise is where Biggie got his notorious. I remember playing it for a young artist we were working with. obviously they knew Biggie Smalls and the Hypnotize record. And I played this one record. They go, oh, it kind of sounds like it. I'm like, wait till you get into like 3 minutes or so. And then all of a sudden that blam, boom, 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 down, 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 down. But that, going back to hip hop, there was an art to sampling. There was a creative geniusness of, you know, even Kanye's old stuff before he went nuts marrying a Kardashian. Now, which I think they're over or something's going on in that world. Who knows? But there was an art to taking a sample and breathing new life to it, you know, where, you know, and I'm not going to be that older statesman that shits on, because there's some dope new production from some of these young guys. But when people are celebrating, you know, mediocrity, when it's like, it's literally just throwing in an 808, some 64 notes, and they pop in like, oh, okay, I popped in the key, the chords for me. Like, learn how to play some piano. Learn how to play. I'm not saying you got to be the next Herbie Hancock. You know what I mean? But like, learn your craft, like a DJ. Like, I spin, but I'm like, when we do our parties, I can really mix records because I'm used to mixing stuff as a producer. Ask me to scratch, forget it. I'm not going to try. I do a little bit, but it's like the old school shit where you're first learning. I don't attempt to. But if you want to be that, learn it. Like, fucking learn how to do it. Learn how to do it. So if they take your laptop away and your program, you could sit there with a guitar or a keyboard and go, you know what? I can recreate. I could play this shit. I could play a version of it. As a producer, you got to be like that. Like, because when the world changes again and trap music is not cool anymore, which eventually it's already morphing again. What do you got? You got to be able to reinvent yourself and move. Like, I love scores. Like, where he has, like, Antiques, I love scores. Like, in the car, I probably listen to more music, score music. You know, like, the guy who does The Mandalorian. He is absolutely incredible. He has taken what we all know as Star Wars, as John Williams' score, taken it and completely removed John Williams out of the equation. And you don't watch it going, ah, I missed that classic. Yeah. And when you know, spoiler alert, when Luke came around with the, you know, and he threw in that little John Williams, he did it in his way. And it was fucking brilliant. So I listen to that, and that goes into our production with Adrian's choruses being like big and like heavy strings and different parts into these choruses. Like, you're going to hear with our new Swiftie album, where the verse is straight, straight, dirty, grungy hip hop. But then the chorus goes into a whole other world where Adrian's able to really showcase, you know, Swiftie said it, where he goes, I'm a battle rapper, man. Everything I've always rapped about is battle, but you and your brother have really been able to get my story out. And you know, when you're in a group of D12, you're probably not able to fully get your personal story out and all the shit that Swiftie's gone through, you know, in his childhood and it growing up in Detroit. So it's an honor to be working with him and helping to tell his story.
The guy who scored it, his name is Ludwig Hansson.
I wasn't sure if he was Swedish or Switzerland.
People always get that mixed up.
Yeah. Talking about The Mandalorian, you score TV shows, right?
Yeah. We did, we co-produced and co-wrote the theme song for The Real Housewives of Miami. So we did that. We did some music. Thandi Newton was in a show called Rogue on DirecTV. So we did, actually, funny enough, they needed like James Brown for this Russian mafia scene. So we did some music for that. There's a Canadian TV show called Kim's Corner Store about Korean family owns a convenience store. We did music for that. Short films, we've scored short films. Like, you know the show Top Boy? It's about like drug culture in East London, like drug dealers and stuff. So there's a guy, Sean Romulus, on the show. He plays Driz. He did a short film called Three Roads, and it's actually on Amazon Prime in the UK, about half an hour. We did all of the music. So it's like a mixture, R&B music. Actually, there's no hip hop, funny enough. It's all R&B, yeah. It's house music. It's some like pop R&B, but we did the whole thing. And then funny enough with him, now through our independent label, we put out his first single called Starting. So it's so funny, like, here's again a dude, I'm watching Top Boy. That's a thing that I like more than Lucas. I like a lot of the gangster shows and the drug dealer shows and stuff. Like, I love a lot of foreign films. Like, Trapped, it's got nothing to do with drugs, but Trapped is a show that takes place in Iceland.
you know, they're speaking in Icelandic. Luke doesn't have the stomach to sit through that. I love that shit. I love foreign films.
What was the Norwegian one?
Oh, the guy from Sopranos, Steve Van Zandt, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Lilyhammer or something.
Lilyhammer.
Lilyhammer. Yeah. That was so good, too.
I like all of that stuff. Because in many ways, I think I'm a bit of a... We're both gregarious, but out of the two, Luke's probably a little bit more social.
Ada could be a hermit.
I could be like kind of a hermit. I haven't shaved in a while. I look like...
Gandalf?
Gandalf. I need a staff.
Actually, you look more like Hagrid from Harry Potter.
Thanks a lot, Luke.
Hello, Hagrid.
I mean, I'm sure being siblings, knowing each other your entire lives, how does that translate to like the business aspect? How do you guys manage still continuing to work with each other?
Yeah. You know what? So we have a great partner, Will Van Ziel, Nova Music Group management, but him and his full family are like family. His wife, Joanna, who also is with Nova Music, they run a management firm, and he's with us with Gladiator. And he's like a calm factor. But with us being brothers, like when something goes wrong, we know we can't tell everybody to go fuck off. So we could tell each other because at least we can kind of get it out. But a lot of times, you know, like Adrian is a hawk. If something's wrong online, if there's a dot that's missing, if there's a number that's not there, if it's missing a feature on Spotify, forgot to put somebody's name.
We play different positions at different times. And what pisses me off, Lucas texted me or WhatsApped me the other morning. I looked at him like, fuck, I'm going to look at it when I really wake up. And he was like alarmed about something. And I'm like, Luke, it's like a minor thing, man. We'll just change this or that. But then something else that I overreact about, he might be like, yo, just chill. So that's why it's like good cop and bad cop.
And we can tell each other to F off. And oftentimes when we fight, the result is something better than we initially. Then we apologize. We hug. We take our rubber ducky. We take a nice hot bath, and then we feel better.
I know what fantasies you got.
Rubber ducky.
No, but
you're the one.
But I think that's a part of it's a part of being an artist, and it's in our culture. Having Italian, Latin blood, there's passion there. Like everything we do, and that's why Italians and hip hop go well together. We talk with our hands. Like
look,
we speak loud. Like. We're not even mad. And sometimes, like, my daughters are like, you're so loud. I'm like, well, kids.
We're yelling all the time.
Because it's just like.
Every question you've given us, we're yelling it. And every question is response with the long versions of the Lord of the Ring trilogy.
I love it. I love getting to know you guys. I feel like.
Vice versa, man. Listen, when the world, and I mean this sincerely, man, because again, we love people, and that's what I hate about COVID. I hate the fact that we can't go out and do this to someone and do this to someone. And we also had a lot of film projects on the go that we just, being an independent company, we don't have the money of a Netflix or an HBO. You know, we don't want to go film something and then someone got sick or possibly died with COVID under our watch.
You know, in the hip hop community, in the arts community, going, man, COVID's crazy, man. Yeah, it's nuts. And then in the same breath, Instagram, there's like 8 guys in the studio all sharing one bottle of Henny. And you're going, what the fuck?
Or are all smoking one
passing
joint.
One joint. You're going, guys, and then no wonder you had COVID twice.
You know what it is? We're all parents, right? Yeah. All of us, we've got a lot more to lose than people who don't. And then there are people who have kids and just don't give a shit. But it just, like, you know, we're trying to hold shit together, man. So we can go to Europe again. Like, we're dying to go to Europe again, man, for the music, for family.
But people don't realize that even if you don't have kids, if you have parents, that's the thing. Like, oh, mom and dad, you want to come over for a cup of coffee? Or here, I brought you your mail. 3 days later, oh, mom's not feeling good. Why? Because your stupid ass couldn't just stay the fuck home.
Talking about being fathers... you know, you're both fathers, you're husbands. How do you balance the grind and the hustle of making music with your family lives?
I think because we've made them part of the process. So they know the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, we'll keep some things from them. But like they kind of see, and it's like, we don't want to shelter them. Our kids know, like I had a conversation with Renee, like, you know, like life's unpredictable. We have to try to adapt. But like, that's why we put them on the album. And I think we've had the best role models in our lives, man. Not to be corny, but our parents, you know, our parents were multitaskers. Our grandfather was a multitasker, the master of multitaskers. So we're able to touch on wood, balance a lot of things. And I think still be good fathers and hopefully to our wives, be good husbands.
Yeah, I think also like having the studio here, this is my house. Obviously the studio is here because I, you know, run all the equipment. It's a raised bungalow, so it's a nice, like, the kids are literally out that door.
there's a little TV area where the kids often watch their stuff like that. And so at least, you know, Adrian's only a minute away. Oftentimes, if we're recording and it's not like a late night, he'll bring the girls, his girls over, and they'll play for hours while our wives get to go shopping and go doing things and hang out. When we got our publishing deal with Universal, this was probably like, you know, 7-8 years ago now, you know, we got an advance from Universal, and we could have said, okay, you know what, the two of us, we got enough money to go to LA for a year and just grind it out. But, you know, last night was my daughter's 11th birthday, and she was holding me with Oliver, and that to me is worth more than gold, than losing these important years for the kids. It might take us a little extra to get to exactly where we feel we need to be.
Or where we deserve to
be. Or where we deserve to be. But I'd rather know that what we're building is on the...
We didn't sacrifice our integrity.
That's what it is. Yeah.
I couldn't live with myself if we...
Knowing the kids.
If knowing that if our kids thought we were deadbeat dads and shitbags and didn't care for them. Because our whole thing is family. You know what I mean? Like the other day, my daughter was having difficulty in math and she came down... And she was crying because all of the kids do really well in school, but it was so fast, you know, and this remote learning and you're learning about percents and interest rates. And I grabbed her. I'm like, don't worry. I'm going to help you do it. And I did her work. I showed her. I'm like, I'll do it with you, because some other person might say, oh, you got to do it on yourself. But like, how could I just, my baby's crying. Like even today, I gave her a kiss on the cheek. I'm like, Bella, don't worry. Her name's Julia, but you know, Italians, you call your daughters Bella. I'm like, Bella, like, don't worry, man, we'll get through it. And like today she was like, Dad, I did it. We did the math. Family for us is everything. And that's why, like, even on the Legacy album, there's an interlude called D'Amico Interlude. Those are our nephews rapping. That's a family affair. Our kids are all on the family
but if Jay-Z wanted to work with us, I might say, kids, you're just gonna have to wait.
The fun thing about this too is like, because our daughters see all this, you know, and now like it's really kicked in, especially guys like Conway, because the Griselda is the talk around town right now. Right. So we have another record with Benny the Butcher on another album that came out in March. We produced it. It's called Welcome to the 716. And so it's really kicked in for our kids now. But like my oldest daughter will still, like if I'm on my phone, I'm like, she's like, Daddy, who are you texting, Snoop Dogg? But then 2 years ago, we opened up for Snoop. Right. In a town called Sudbury at a hockey arena. It was like capacity is 5,000 people. The whole friggin' town. It's a mining town in Northern Ontario. The whole friggin' town came out. So again, my daughter joking around, but she's like, oh my God, Daddy, like I'm joking with you, but you and Cio in Italian, like in okay. Spanish, Tio, you know, Cio, you and Cio open up for Snoop Dogg.
It was funny because, you know, like, I went to my daughter's school that week when we got back from the concert, and she was telling kids in her class that my dad opened up for Snoop Dogg. And the teacher's like, who's real, like, librarian, like, real straight A's. You opened up for who? And then this kid in her class, he looked at me like, Vanessa's dad opened up for Snoop Dogg? What? And it was like, and at the time, she was in grade 3 at the time.
That's the sad thing. Like, the guy who put on the tour, shout out to Robbie G. We've done music with him over the years. We've got a bunch more music coming out with him this year. He does a lot of these tours. We did a song with him. It was him and his manager's company. So they're like, yo, man, I'm opening up for Snoop. Do you guys want to come and do our records together? And so we're like, yo, hell yeah, man. So it's sad for, like, again, the smaller promotional companies, because they're not Rock Nation or Live Nation, that they've got money in the pot. Like, these guys are just like...
Oh, the independents are suffering.
The independents are really suffering.
Live musicians are suffering. Now, the people that bread and butter is to perform, you know, whether you're a cover band, whether you're DJing every, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturdays, and... They're the ones that I feel for right now, because there's no curbside pickup when you're a musician. It's tough. It's tough right now, you know?
Yeah. So,
yeah. And then you get social media companies that are trying to shut people down, like Facebook and shit. You're not getting, you know, paid for it, but at least you can spin for an hour and put some smiles on people's faces and shit. And
you get DistroKid and Spotify. Last week, they ripped down 750,000 songs, saying that it was illegal downloads and stuff.
Yeah, DistroKid is, if you don't know what it is, it's going to upload, you know, independently. And for whatever reason, Spotify deleted 750,000 people's albums, singles, for no reason.
But Spotify has a share in DistroKid.
Yeah, and Spotify's actually saying it was DistroKid. So there's all this thing, but imagine you put your blood, sweat, and tears on a project, and they're sending you a bullshit email like it's fake streaming. And you're like, no. I worked for those 20,000 streams, or I worked for those 100,000 streams, or a million streams, or 10 fucking streams. they just pulled it down. It's like you're scratching your head, right? It's like trying to kick the little people down, right? But then Justin Bieber can go, hey, guys, keep streaming my song 24 hours and using VPNs.
But that was because, you know, you go on Twitter and you're looking at some of the documentation or people are resharing emails that DistroKid would send them. And that was one of the things. Please tell your friends not to replay songs. How are you going to tell someone not? There's times when I love a song, like I love James Brown, pay the cost to be the boss.
Yeah.
I'll loop that shit. Pay the cost to be the boss.
But a lot of people.
What am I like now? You're going to rip down James Brown, pay the cost to be the boss on Spotify because I listened to it 400 times in a day.
But a lot of artists, yeah, a lot of fans, crazy, a lot of fans play people's music constantly all day, the same song. They love it.
Especially teenagers.
Exactly.
Yeah. Banana phone all day long for my toddler. That's her jam. Banana phone with Rafi.
He's got some bars though.
Yo, Rafi does. Yo, no, listen, not even Rillaby, joking.
Wallaby,
Rafi's got a new song. It came out a couple of years ago. It's called Tweet Me Right.
Oh yeah. Oh,
for real?
He's Canadian, actually, but he was born in Egypt. But like Tweet Me Right, it's got an Egyptian kind of beat.
Tweet Me Right, really?
Yeah, and he's like, what's that? LOL OMG, Tweet Me Right.
I thought that was a Silk song.
No. Tweet me, baby. Aw, yeah. I wanna tweet you up and down.
You know what? I was always happy that my kids never liked Baby Shark. Thank the fucking Lord. I got to hear that Baby Shark shit one more time.
But Rafi, you know, man, his melodies, like, even though it's kids' music, the melodies, like, thanks a lot, thanks for the na-na-na-na-na, thanks
a lot. Yeah, Rafi was...
The melodies are just incredible. Even though it's, like, children's music, a melody's a good melody.
What advice would you give your teenage self?
I think right off the bat, I'd say just do you, man. Don't worry about what other people think. Because at the end of the day, you've got to live with yourself. Do you... You'll get there eventually. Yeah. Like, everyone is supposed to get to where they're supposed to get to when they're meant to get there. Don't stress out about there. Just do you.
And for me, stay focused. Stay focused. And if you have a hunch on doing that particular thing, like that genre or that, stick to that. Stick to what you, like your gut. Your gut is always right.
Now that I have brothers, what would you tell your brother's younger self?
To Luke, I would say...
Shut the fuck up.
No. I would say, listen, your production is great.
Thank you.
You know what I mean? And don't worry about what other people say, man. Just keep doing it, man. Keep smiling. Keep smiling. Yeah, like your production's dope.
I would say the same thing. You're singing. I think we kind of have the same thing. Like, again, going back to some of the...
No, you would say, don't make fun of my weight because as I've gotten older, I'm the fatter one now. So he'd say, you better watch it because karma's a bitch.
It's a glandular problem. No, I think he's right. I think not the weight thing. I think he's right too. Like, you know, as you grow, like Adrian and I...
You doubt yourself when you're young.
You doubt yourself. And we've had people tell us that. I had one guy, and I will not name his name because he's a waste of space, but told me that I'd never be able to make hip-hop beats. And told Adrian, one girl who's never signed an important act in her entire recording career as an A&R, said that you shouldn't try to sound like Prince because why are you so, you use so many words in your shit, catchy words. It ate us up as teenagers, right? Of course, because you're younger. Now that we're older, I just say, yeah, go fuck yourself. Like, yeah, and those people are still doing the same shit. Some people are just out there to spread negative energy.
People just want, listen, life is a jungle and there's animals in the jungle. They want to be the predator. They want to be the alpha female or male. They feel threatened by you. By putting someone down verbally, sometimes it's even worse than a physical. You know, it's just like with a relationship. You know, sometimes you might not even strike someone, but your words. You know, I grew up with a girl in elementary school, man. Like, people were really mean to her, and she ended up writing a book about a postpartum depression. But like, I didn't even realize to the degree how mean some of the girls we grew up with. How mean they really were to her. So it's just like, I think to kids, like, just stay the course and. Gives a shit about other people. I tell my kids that too, man. Do you enjoy the friendship? I don't want my kids to grow up cynical and to be suspicious and to be that old school Italian, like, yo, watch that person. Like, have a chip on your shoulder, but like, don't depend on people, because that's another thing. We've depended on people our whole career. Brand name managers, big record companies, small record companies. We're doing more at a later time in our career.
Independently.
Because independently, we're depending on us and our partner, Will. He's from Swaziland, South Africa. We call him our Swazi Italian brother.
like the three of us are, and with his beautiful wife, Joanna, we're accomplishing more, the three, four of us. And like other people will do a thing here or there for us, but all in all, it's like us doing almost 90% of everything from the business side to everything, coming up with concepts for videos, editing shit. Shout out to There Be Monsters, who does a lot of our artwork. But like we do, we're starting to do a lot of our things too, our own things. Cause again, with the world, you can't get out and maneuver as much. We're just trying to be learn as many skills as we can. I think with the world is so, we've lost touch of humanity. Like technology is great because look, we would have never been able to reach out to each other unless we grew up in Boston or Florida or Germany or Switzerland or Toronto or whatever. But look, there's this link. So when the world does, like you guys have friends now in Niagara on the Lake and in Toronto. I know that we have friends in Switzerland. So, and that's the beauty about music and art. Like artists, we have to stick together, man. And that's the thing we love about music. We love knowing we can go to Bari in Italy. We got homies separate from our, like our blood family. We got homies to kick it with. We can go to Atlanta. We got homies. We can go to the Bronx. We got homies. We can go to California. And that's the beauty about this, you know, hip hop family, right? Of getting to know people. So it's like, I'm looking forward to when the world opens up and we go to Italy. And then we're like, hey guys, we're in Italy. Like we're going to step in Switzerland for like 2 days. Are you guys free? We meet up at a cafe.
You play Annie up and we start punching.
Yeah. Done. Going, but you know who's a rapper? He's Italian, but he lives in Switzerland. Gué Pequeno.
Oh yeah, I know Pequeno. His DJ, JK, was my mentor.
Okay, wow.
JK taught me like all the fundamentals. And now he toured with Gué Pequeno for a long time.
Like Pequeno does a lot of trap stuff, but like he still does some of the old school stuff. You know, certain goals in the new year, like, because we work with a lot of Italian artists, but we're like, yo, man, we'd like to get that real big Italian artist. He's a guy, like, or like, I like Jake LaFuria. NC is dope. MS Killa is dope. Vito Shade could really rap, but those guys are like some older statesmen who are still respected in the youth, like the Gué Pequeños. See, it's a small world, man.
Yeah. What is hip-hop to you?
Hip-hop is what we just spoke about, man. It's crossing barriers, crossing oceans, crossing invisible borders and languages. It's communal. It's love. It's empathy. It's understanding. It's art. And it's legacy. That's legacy. That's hip-hop, man.
You said it perfectly.
Thank you so much to our guests, 80 Empire, for taking the time and being so open while sharing your perspective with us.
Some of the gems we took away from this interview were: creating a legacy is about what you add to the people's lives you connect with and what you leave behind for the next generation. It is the impact that transcends our lives and the story that will be remembered.
Being unapologetic means that you refuse to transform and compromise who you are simply to conform. It's standing firm in the knowledge that you are a work in progress with infinite potential.
Sibling relationships are valuable not only in childhood, but over the course of a lifetime. Some of the benefits of working with your family are shared core values, trust, and having fun. Our theme music was beatboxed by Dennis DeMenis and produced by CD. A big shout out to the brothers from Switzerland.
The background music was produced by Taki Brano. A big thank you to Abroski from Providence.
Much love to our loyal listeners in Rennes, Switzerland. Merci beaucoup pour votre soutien.
Our podcast basically runs on coffee. To keep our show running, you can support by buying us a coffee through the link in our show notes. A huge thank you to Aaron Myers for supporting us with the 2021 Coffee Connect. You are the best.
We would love to get your feedback, questions, and any suggestions you might have. You can reach out to us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook at SolidarityLLC or via email solidarityllc@gmail.com.
If you like today's show, please tell a friend about our podcast. Or as Five Dog would say,
tell your mother, tell your father, send a telegram.
In our next episode, we have Jamar Hopkins, aka Township Soul. Jamar is an extraordinary dancer, visual artist, actor, entertainer, educator, and mentor from Oakland, California. He represents Beats and Pieces as well as the Floor Lords crew.
Don't forget to subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review.
See you on our next episode. Thank you for listening to our podcast.
No, seriously, though. Thank you. I am Candy.
I am DJ Razorcut. And this is Souls of Hip Hop.